Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Laya Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit layahealthcare.ie. Laya Healthcare, looking after you always.
This Sunday, I don't know if you know, but is the 19th of November and it marks International Men's Day. So, look, unfortunately, societal gender roles can dictate that when men express emotion, they are not, inverted commas, real men. And this stigma can cause men to suppress their emotions in order to present themselves as, let's say, manly or strong. So joining me now is a man who has first-hand experience of this. John Boland, you are very, very welcome to the show. How's it going?
Jennifer, what's happening?
You're a hugger, first of all.
Absolutely.
Which I love. You're like, you came into the studio and you're one of the warmest people I've ever met, I have to say. So thank you for being here to talk about this. I think this is a really important conversation to have. So before we get into the amazing work that you do, can we talk about your personal experience and how this has led to you helping others?
Okay, yeah.
Where do you want to start with this?
Let's start 5 years ago.
Okay.
When I was 48 years of age, I was separated at the time. I had 30 years of carnage between 18 and 48. Not much happiness, alcohol and cocaine. I was separated, as I said. I was living alone. I was lonely. It was a nasty breakup at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't got a great relationship with my eldest boy, my stepson, and I'd only see my youngest boy, Sean, twice a week, which was a Thursday and a Sunday. And this particular Sunday, 5 years just gone, the bank holiday Sunday, he said he wouldn't be in the house. I was at the meeting out on the Friday night, and I was down, broken. He had come home unexpectedly. I was in his arms and I was very upset. And I was in that embrace. I just says, John, something has to change. So I made that decision from that night that I've got to stop alcohol and drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And I continued on a pathway without drugs and alcohol. And then unfortunately, then a couple of months down the road, I had a very serious work accident. Which I was supposed to be in the Beacon for one night. I ended up being in for 9 days.
Oh my God.
Leaving after 9 days on a very high amount of medication.
Okay.
Actually, it was 36 tablets. I remember it well. 3 sets of 12 on the day I left, but they contained opioids, OxyContin, OxyNorm, which I wasn't aware of. I had nerve pain, serious nerve pain. And it was over the next few months that I noticed that I was slipping form-wise. I had this persona of the happy mask when I was publicly out, but in the house I was completely broken. I was frozen shoulder. I was all action down the GAA club. It was hurling football. Now I was like incapacitated, lonely. Loneliness was a big killer.
And you felt it physically, you said.
Massively. You
know, isn't that crazy?
Massively. But the slump in me form was deteriorating.
Yeah.
And
to a dangerous level?
Absolutely. That got progressively worse. And in those couple of months after the accident, on the day I was getting the surgery, I had two close friends that passed away through suicide. Liam Cooney died on the day I was going into theatre, tragically through suicide. And a couple of months later, another close friend that I played football with, Pete Keeley.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. So at Peter's funeral, I was in the depths of darkness.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the funeral with a very good friend of mine, Eric Brady. We went to two funerals that day. And I remember observing the front of the church as the coffin pulled up with his family, and all my friends were outside the church that I knew, but I was observing it from about 20 metres away. So I noticed all the lads with a serious face as the coffin went by, and then I noticed everyone getting back to normal, having a joke, some of the lads having a smoke, and some fellas going off. It was at that moment, and he has loads of sisters, and I have 5 sisters. It was at that moment that I visualised it was me in the coffin. They were my sisters. And I just saw everybody got carrying on as normal.
Yeah.
And that reinforced my decision that I was 1,000,000% right to take my own life. That's the dark place, which we'll speak about in a while, where I was. So I wasn't 100% sure. I was 1,000,000% sure that I was doing the right thing. The narrative that was there at the moment was hindrance, failure. Your kids be better with a different role model to look up to. At least she's going to find somebody else. This is repetitive from the time you open your eyes in the morning to eventually you close them at night. And also, my circumstances were still the same. I was still living alone, out of action, mortgage arrears, letters coming in the door. I had a bit going on.
Yeah, you had a lot going on.
So that's when I decided to make out the plan to lie down in front of the train shortly after that in Clonsilla on the Thursday morning, which, you know, so. But I was 1,000,000% convinced I was doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's where...
Your head was.
Yeah.
Could you put a label on it? Did you know... For you, did you think this is just me, or did you know you were depressed?
I didn't know what was going on.
Okay.
I'd never, like, my circumstances, you know, I was lonely. You know, again, I wasn't involved in the GAA club. I stepped back away from everything because of the injury.
Yeah.
I was in the house too much time to think.
Isolated.
Going back to the hospital, a record in the Beacon over the seriousness of the injury. And I kept on saying to them, why am I crying? Is anything got to do with the medication? And they were saying no. And I was going, right, don't cry. I didn't cry when my mother passed away. I'm in tears consistently. What's going on? Is there anything? And I kept on asking about the medication. No. So I ended up having it out with the surgeon or the pain consultant further down the road, which I'm not going to say his name, in the Beacon, to say, why could a human being not tell another human being when I left the hospital that you might just be a little bit out of kilter? I really have an issue with that. Due to the amount of medication I was on. And they couldn't say to me, John, you just might be a little bit out of kilter, because I slumped.
Did you, when you were going through these very dark days, having these thoughts of suicide, feeling and thinking you were 100% right in taking your life, did you ever reach out to one of the five sisters or any of your friends or any of the lads? Did you ever... think, I'm going to talk to someone?
No. The answer is no. Again, we're going to talk about this further. I was so far gone by caring about my loved ones, which we'll talk about this. I'm going to do this, you know. So it's where I was. It's like if you look through a telescope, you look through the small end and the wide end magnifies your life. Well, my life was looking... with the opposite way. I was looking through the wide end and all I could see was the little bit of light and the rest was black. So that's where I was, you know.
So tell me then, what stopped you from going to that train station in Clonsilla? What stopped you that day?
Well, the most ironic story in the world, for starters. I'm involved with the St. Peregrine's GAA club. We had lost a senior member, a very senior member, through suicide, Owen Gilhooley. A tragedy. And after Owen's death, we were doing the Owen Gilhooley Memorial Trophy.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a committee set up to run this day of a fundraiser for D15 Suicide Awareness. And the lady that was chairperson of the meeting of the committee was Elaine Ford. And I was great on the committees, but I hadn't been around the club. And she said to me, John, please come down, I need your hand. And I says, Elaine, I'm in the house. And I had the mask on while I was talking to her. But she said to me, I really need you. This meeting was on the Wednesday night and I was going to Clonsilla train station on the Thursday morning. So I'm sitting at the meeting and who comes in beside me? Owen Gilhooley's daughter, Louise. Hey, John, I brought down the biscuits. We had the cup of tea. Jennifer, you need to speak to Spar. You speak to him. We'll get some money off him. We get biscuits off them. And we'll make her a success.
Mm-hmm.
I said goodbye to everybody. Nobody was aware of what I was doing. And as I walked out, Louise followed me. We speak about this and several times. I texted her last night. And she said to me, John, are you okay? And of course, I had the mask on. And Grand Louise.
Grand.
She asked me the second time. Grand, she held me by the hand. This is true. She said to me, I'm just going to ask you one more time. Are you okay? And I said, no. First time ever to use that word. You know, this is true. So she said to me, will you come down here for a minute? So she brought me down to the notice board. And since Owen had passed away, we run multiple fundraisers in our GAA club for D15 Suicide Awareness, the charity that saved my life. She said to me, I want you to make me a promise. Ring Sue in the morning, please. I says, yeah, okay. I went home. I'm going to go up on Thursday instead of going to Clonsilla train station. I drove to the Beacon. I told them I was suicidal, that it was going to take me life that morning. I got an emergency appointment back with my GP and I got an emergency appointment to see D15 Suicide Awareness that Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So I practically crawled in to see Anne, a lady that I still see. And I spoke with Anne for about an hour uninterrupted, and it was like a 10-ton weight lifted off me. So my saving, I don't know the word, started that Thursday. And I saw Anne 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
To 4 days, to three, over 8 months with the introduction of an antidepressant. And I talk about my recovery is measured in fractions.
Mm-hmm.
That's how slow my recovery was. It was measured in fractions. It was hard, but I could feel those fractions. Every time I'd speak to Anne, I felt a fraction better.
Okay.
And I could actually feel that fraction.
Firstly, was that first fraction of recovery when you admitted that you weren't okay?
I used the word no, that I never spoke about before. I never. Grant. John
Grant,
Boland.
Yeah, yeah.
Look at him. He's always in great form.
Great form.
6'4".
Yeah.
And
was
no.
it easier to speak to this, her name again?
Louise.
Was it easier to say that to Louise than to your son or a family member?
Like, the answer to that question is I don't know, you know. Like, I don't know. It's not something you go around telling people you're suicidal.
No.
And my circumstances were, I think, different than other people's. The loneliness, the arm, the medication. You know, my circumstances were different at the time. And I firmly believe the medication, I spiraled uncontrollably into the dark.
Yeah, into a very dark place.
Oh, yeah.
But what's really interesting about your story, John, it seems like you talked about being at funerals of men, you know, who've taken their lives.
Yeah.
And it seems to be in your world and a lot of people's worlds and in the world we live in, it's affecting so many people and so many men. And that's why this day, International Men's Day, is important. Can you talk about the work that you do now and how you got to that place of helping others?
Well, I have a second chance in life and I'm grabbing it with both hands.
Mm-hmm.
I found a new purpose in life. I went from a people pleaser to being extremely vulnerable to being extremely honest. So I'm not a people pleaser anymore. And that purpose is helping people. We got back, myself and the wife got back together. We're unbelievably happy. I'm drug free, alcohol free, fit and healthy. Created a hashtag last year, Darkness into Height, to go from the darkest place imaginable to Everest Base Camp. I've completely changed my life around with the introduction of education, mm-hmm. still on the medication, look at myself reasonably well food-wise. Other mm-hmm. people might disagree. Love cakes. So, an awful lot of self-care and I give back. You know, I
do
like
you love
back.
Yourself now?
Yeah, I do actually. I love me, who I
Good.
Am. Where I used to be concerned what other people would think of me.
Mm-hmm.
No. Far from actually. Quite the opposite, you know. So, you know, I like giving back.
Well, you certainly do. You work with so many people and you do so much good work. Why is it important to keep this work ongoing, especially today?
Well, I'm lucky enough to have two grown-up kids. So I have the time.
Mm-hmm.
I work a 9-to-5. I do volunteer in the Tolga River Project, People
okay.
in Recovery. I was asked to do a presentation after COVID in relation to proactive events, which means getting out on the beach, getting up on the mountains, being in a nice positive environment where you're not judged, which I volunteer there, which I love the clients, and I can watch them grow, you know, from people coming in with a substance abuse issue and watch them grow when they put the work in. Everything changes when you introduce change.
Do you feel we've made progress though, John? Made progress with regards to men's mental health and the stigma that it's attached to it, like I mentioned earlier on, there's a lot of men feel that they can talk about their feelings because they would be seen as less manly. Is that still a stigma that's relevant today? Does that still go on, would you say?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that. If you had asked me that a month ago, I would have said it is changing. But there's a suicide contagion in Blanchardstown at the moment. I've just got a phone call of Laura McMahon in the car park. That is 7th person in the last 4 weeks. 6 young men and a lady. So if anyone's listening in Blanchardstown, they know who I'm talking about.
Uh-huh.
So that's a contagion. That's not taken into account the attempted suicides.
Yeah.
And a certain young man, the father of an 8-year-old child that's on a life support machine from Blanchardstown. So I'm an ambassador for the services that saved my life. And we've met with the HSE last week with all the services in Blanchardstown, trying to get together to do the right thing for the community, discussing maybe a walk. We're trying to think of the right words where we have to take in the family's sensitivities of what's going on at the moment. But there's a contagion. But in relation to, if this was 4 weeks ago, I think it is changing.
Okay.
In relation to men being more open and being more vulnerable. And I'd like to mention Blue Balls Ireland, a men-only group that I'm a member of, that we swim regularly, but we meet up regularly. And we do these, we have guest speakers in, Richie Sadlier, fantastic mm-hmm. guests in.
Yes, we've had Richie on the show.
Richie, unbelievable guy. Yeah. But we do these men's circles that I've been attending the last year. I attended the first one, complete imposter syndrome. What am I doing here? He's more educated than me. Oh, his story is worse than me. But over the year, we've got to realise that this common humanity exists, that our struggles are the same. So it's a place where men can be felt to be seen and heard.
And talk.
And you've no idea of how powerful that is.
Oh, listen. Well, I think you've proved that in your own story and how important it is to talk. And John, I just want to ask you, for anyone who's listening now, some lad might be in the van listening to the show and is not having a good time and is feeling the pressures of life and is feeling a bit isolated. But where is that mask that so many people do when he's out and about with the lads and with the friends and whatever, but is just not feeling good inside? What would your advice to him be?
Well, it's not a sign of weakness to ask for help. It's actually a sign of bravery and courageous, you know. And you're too important. Like I had this huge dark cloud over me. This huge dark cloud. But it moved on. And look what I've achieved. And it drives me on to help people more and more and more. That, you know, if we can get to people to signpost them for help, that you are too important. But one thing I think we can control, yourself here with your studio, with your team here, is about be kind to people.
Yeah.
You know, so people say what you can control. Well, I can control my family and friends. Be kind, because you just don't know what somebody is going through.
Very true.
People in their workplace, teammates, let's be kind.
Strangers online.
Come on, random act of kindness, you know.
Absolutely.
So that's for starters, you know.
Finally, as we said at the top, this Sunday is International Men's Day, for which you are organising a walk and talk. You showed me pictures of previous events. There's a lot of lads on those walks. It's gorgeous to see, I have to say. Can you tell me about this and where people can find out more info?
Yeah, absolutely. So this follows on from a huge hike that we did in February. Unfortunately, that was in remembrance of three guys who had taken their own lives. Their best friends were up talking about the void that's left of sadness since they've passed. And those three men should be still here today.
Absolutely.
You know, so following on from that, a great friend of mine on Flood came up with a date for the 19th International Men's Day. And we're going to have a gathering on the mountains that we did that was hugely successful. And it's called Shoulder to Shoulder. That when you're walking with a man that you don't know, you just get the chats going. And more importantly, just listen when someone's speaking. You don't have to have the answer. You're not there to be a problem solver, just to be a soundboard. So we're going to go ahead again. It's in The Gap, which is The Gap Adventure Park in Glencullen.
That's right.
Which are very, very supportive. I do multiple events all year round. They're going to facilitate us with some teas and coffees afterwards. A guest speaker from Men's Aid Ireland, which is a lady, Katrina.
Good on
She's
you.
Just have a few words there, and we have some soft music afterwards. So it's open to all men.
And if anybody wants to drop up a bit of cake, which you're fond of,
with my name I don't share.
John, a lot of text coming in on 51552. Somebody said, OMG, John has actually stopped me in my tracks. I have a tear in my eye and I can really relate. This texter says, a lot of people are struggling. Very brave of you to tell this story. Another texter said suicide rate in Donegal is abnormal and it doesn't seem to be highlighted half enough. During COVID, we talked about deaths daily. No one mentions the suicide rate. It's massive in Ireland. Another texter, I've been down that black hole too. I feel like there is little or no sympathy for men in these cases. The thing at the time is that it all makes sense to do it. Mm. I'm a dad of two, this texter says. A son who's six and a daughter who is three. It's happy days now after my daughter's first birthday. Men need help too. Absolutely. John Boland, thank you so much for joining me today and sharing your story and stopping everybody in their tracks, really, I have to say. And I want to say to you guys, if you have been affected by any of what you've heard today, you can contact the Samaritans by calling their number 116 213 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.